It's great to see so many of you here this morning. I'm Diane Goodwin. I'm with U.S. Trust here in the Boston office. I'm a private client advisor and managing director, and I have the special privilege of introducing Lisa King to you today. There was a little change in the original program, so Lisa King is our speaker, and she will be, as it mentions there, picturing your prosperity. So, as part of U.S. Trust, I'm part of Bank of America, the private bank within Bank of America, and along with my Bank of America colleagues and many of our Merrill Lynch colleagues who are here today, we're very pleased to be sponsors again for the Mass Women's Conference again this year. At U.S. Trust, we work with high net worth individuals and families to help them manage their financial lives. We offer customized investment management, credit, and banking solutions for people with significant financial opportunities, but along with those come financial complexity, and we help them to work with all of those things. We offer specialized expertise in estate and tax planning, trustee services, philanthropic solutions, and one special area of note today, socially responsible investing, where we have a special segment specific to women and girls. And I'm happy to say it was the best performing segment in all of 2014 and year to date. I thought I'd mention a little bit about the session. You may have seen this in the flyer in your front of your book. If you did not, Picture Your Prosperity, the session that we are in right now, Smart Money Moves to Turn Your Vision into Reality. If someone asked you to describe prosperity and security, what would you see in your mind's eye? When it comes to financial planning, it's easy to jump right into the minutiae of investments, skipping over the deeper questions of what you really want from your money, both now and in the future. In this session, Lisa King will do just the opposite. She wants you to figure out exactly what you want and what you need. Only then can you make the smart money decisions that can help you turn your vision into a reality. Let me say a little bit about Lisa. Lisa is the co-author of the New York Times best-selling book, Picture Your Prosperity, Smart Money Moves to Turn Your Vision into Reality. She's an executive director at Invesco Consulting and has spent 15 years in the financial services industry. She's a national speaker and developer of educational programs for investors. Lisa holds a BS in journalism with a concentration in speech communications from the University of Illinois, and she earned her registered corporate coach designation in 2004. She's currently a member of the Women's Bond Club, a volunteer for 1 Million Degrees, and a frequent guest speaker at Loyola University in Chicago. Lisa has been a featured presenter at the Pennsylvania Treasury Statewide Tour, the Possible Women Conference, along with Ann Richards. She's attended and participated in countless financial industry conferences, and she's been quoted in media, including Business Week, NBC News Philadelphia, the Chicago Tribune, New York Times, and NPR Marketplace. Let me turn it over to Lisa.
Thank you, Diane. Thank you very much. Oops, I'm sorry. Good morning. Who here would like to see prosperity flow easily and effortlessly into their lives? Okay, good. Who would like to make financial decisions with more confidence and clarity? Who would like to feel centered and calm about money despite what's going on in the market or the economy? One more hand raise. Does anybody not want those things? No? Good. So that is what we're going to cover today. We actually have put together a three-part agenda. And what we're going to begin with is something that, as Diane previewed, a lot of financial presentations don't necessarily cover. And that is, what's your vision? What do you want out of life? And how can your money be a tool to support you in doing whatever that is? So we're going to begin with that. Then we're going to go into knowing where you stand financially. So here we're going to bring in some of the other parts of our kind of brain. We've got two key parts of our brain that we're going to kind of tap into. And then thirdly, we're going to talk about two of the least commonly discussed ideas around financial planning that are probably the biggest prosperity boosters that we've been able to find. And that is gratitude and giving. And these are not typically things that we talk about when we talk about financial planning. So that is where we're headed. And let's begin with this very first idea of creating vision. Now, when we talk about money, we usually talk about the material. We talk about all of the minutiae and the details and the logical parts, the charts, the graphs, the numbers. And those, don't make a mistake here, are very important things. But there is an entire another sphere of this, and that is more of the ethereal. This is more of the creative side, the intuitive side. And so what we're going to explore together this morning is the way those two things are going to come together. So let's start with creating vision. I'm going to ask you a question. And the question is simple. I'm going to ask you to actually answer this to someone that you're sitting by. So I'm going to ask you to just kind of turn to a partner, someone that you're sitting next to. Designate your partner. If you're kind of stranded with three people can do this as well. And I'm just going to ask you a simple question that I'm going to ask you to answer to your partner. And this, the simple question is this. What does prosperity mean to you? What does prosperity mean to you? On the count of three, just turn to your partner and say whatever you're thinking. What does prosperity mean to you? One, two, three. Just said, but I've asked plenty of people this question, and I'm guessing that we had answers that span the waterfront. I'm guessing we had some things like security. I'm guessing we had some freedom. I'm guessing we had some peace of mind. I'm guessing we had, I want to be able to buy stuff. I want some wealth. Oftentimes, oddly, there's an association with water. It means the ocean. It means being able to go on vacation. It means things like that. I don't know if anyone had that. But there is usually a very broad range of answers that come up when we ask that question. If you look the word up in the dictionary, it's defined as being successful or thriving, especially financially, but not exclusively financially. And that's very much why we like the word, because we find that really those answers that we all just kind of share with one another fall into both categories. And this is a workshop about your money and about your life. So it's about being successful, especially financially, but not exclusively financially. So we're going to talk about that. So kind of keep that idea in your mind. And we're going to talk about this idea of creating vision. So there has been a great deal of brain science research done within the last decade. More than ever has been done before, and that's because as MRI technology becomes more sophisticated, scientists are able to understand much more about brain science that they haven't been able to before. So they've been able to prove things that before they really only suspected. And one of the biggest findings is that there is now definitely, they can prove a correlation between what we see ourselves doing, what we envision ourselves doing, and what we actually do. So this is summarized in a book by Srini Pillai, Dr. Srini Pillai, who's a Harvard Med School graduate. He wrote a book called Your Brain in Business. And in that book, he makes this association. It's now widely agreed upon, he says, by scientists that we stimulate the exact same part of our brain when we think about completing an action as we do when we actually complete it. So in simple terms, if I asked you right now, how would you raise your left arm in the air? Think about how you would do that. And now I ask you to actually raise your left arm in the air, you're actually stimulating the exact same part of your brain. And the reason that that is interesting is because it proves this connection that we've only suspected before. So this is something that athletes have understood for a very long time. I'm guessing we have athletes in the room. I'm guessing we have runners and golfers and tennis players. If you ask any athlete this question, they will almost always light up. And they will say, absolutely. When I go through my mental game, when I go through my tennis serve or my golf swing, I actually work with a competitive gymnast who competed in college. And she said she would go through her entire routine, movement by movement, the night before her competition, without ever moving a muscle in bed, laying there. She would always have her best routine. I see a lot of head nods around the room. So it's to the point where the U.S. Olympic Committee actually has a staff of 10 full-time psychologists who do nothing but consult with Olympic athletes about their mental and visual game. Now, the reason I mention it now is because what's true of ourselves athletically and in that context is also true in other areas of our lives, including our financial life. So the question becomes, what do we envision ourselves doing financially? And the reason that this works, the operative part of the brain, this is just a quick little brain moment here. I am by no means a neurologist, but I've done just enough research to make me dangerous here. The reason that this works is that it's part of the brain called the reticular activating system, or RAS for short. Has anyone heard of the RAS, just by a show of hands? That's usually about what we see, you know, in a room this size. A couple of people have heard of it, most haven't. And that's because it is a relatively new idea in a new area of research. But what this is the operative part that makes vision work. And the reason why is that it acts as a filter. So think of it as a filter in your brain that lets information in and also keeps it out. It's in your brain stem. So as a quick example of what it keeps out, let's talk about that first. On your way here this morning to the convention center, how much did you pass that you did not notice? Be honest. How much did you pass, however you got here, that you did not notice? Almost all of it, right? I mean, if you're really being honest, and that's because you didn't need to know it, because you only needed to concentrate on where you were going, where your turn was, where your train stop is, whatever it might be. So your brain essentially keeps that out without you having to consciously do anything. It keeps it out for you. If it let it all in, frankly, it would be overwhelming. It'd be way too much stimuli. So it's your brain saying, this is all you need to know. Let's do a quick contrast about what it lets in. Has anyone bought a new car in the last year or two? Any new cars in the last year or two? What kind of car did you buy?
A Jeep Renegade.
What color?
Red.
So, and what's your name? So Nicole bought a red Jeep Renegade. Nicole, after you bought your red Jeep Renegade, how many other red Jeep Renegades did you start seeing on the road? Have you had that experience?
Yeah,
I saw them different. All of a sudden, they're everywhere. It's not likely because Jeep started making more red Renegades. It's because it's now relevant to Nicole in a way that it wasn't before she owned it. And here's the interesting part. It's not like Nicole's goal in life, I don't think, is to go out in the morning and count Jeeps. But, and yet, she does see some, and she registers them on a subconscious level without necessarily consciously looking for it. That's the RAS. It's now relevant to our brain in a way that it wasn't before because it has meaning now. So that's a quick little sketch of how the RAS works. The exciting part, and what we're about to do, is that you can condition your RAS to essentially look for red Jeeps. You can condition your RAS to look for something that you have deemed to be relevant for whatever reason that it is. So if you think about this, we all have to listen to our RAS. It works subconsciously. But very few of us take the opportunity to talk to our RAS. So we can condition our RAS in the same way that we can condition any other muscle in our body. As you know, the brain is a muscle. You can go to the gym and you can condition your bicep. You can do the same thing with your brain. You can essentially do a bicep curl for your brain. So that's what we're going to do next. So what I've got here is a sort of collage of photographs. And we're going to actually do this right now. You don't need your doctor's permission or anything like that to condition your RAS. It's a very straightforward thing to do. What I want to invite you all to do is to look at the screen and pick one of the images that appeals to you right now for any reason. So if you're like most people, there are probably several that look interesting to you. Try to zone in on just one. Pick one out that speaks to you right now for whatever reason. And we're going to do a couple of quick exercises around this. I'm going to ask you some questions in just a moment. So just pick one to start. Does everyone have one picked out? Okay. So I'm going to walk you through a series of questions about the one that you picked. And the first thing I'm going to ask you to do is to relax. Kind of get into your Zen state. I just went to the earlier session on regulating mood and on the sort of health session earlier, and I learned that you have to breathe through your nose. So try to take a few deep breaths through your nose, relax in your chair. Try to put aside any concerns or anxieties just for a moment. Some people like to close their eyes. You don't have to. You can look at the image on the screen, whatever makes you feel comfortable. And I'm going to ask you a series of questions that I'm just going to ask you to answer to yourselves in your own mind. Nothing in writing. You don't need to say anything yet. So here we go. Question one. As specifically as possible, what does your image that you selected mean to you? As specifically as possible, what does that image mean to you? Give your image now a physical setting if it doesn't already have one. So imagine you're shooting a movie about this idea and you need a movie set. What's your movie set? Where are you physically? Now put yourself there. You're on your movie set and you're behind the camera because it's your movie, but you're also somehow on the other side of the camera because it's your movie. So now you're the subject of the movie. What do you see around you now in the details, in the periphery, or kind of in your sideline vision? Are there other people with you? And if there are, how are they interacting? What do you hear in the background? What do you smell in the air? And as specifically as possible, how do you feel in that place, at that moment? What's your emotional state? And with that, I'm going to draw your attention right back here. Ask you to turn back to your partner, again, to one partner or two if you're stranded in a trio, but no more than two people, and share what you just experienced in your own mind. I'm jealous that I didn't get to hear some of these personal stories because I love to do that too. You all just went somewhere that was really personal. And from the sounds of it and from what I've seen in the past, it was probably also very positive. It was more than just having a fun experience. You actually are stimulating your brain. You were doing a bicep curl for your subconscious and reminding your subconscious, look, this is important. This is something that on a conscious level, I'd really like to pursue. And so whether you know it or not, or whether you're consciously aware of it or not, you're stimulating your RAS to begin to look for opportunities to make that happen. It's not magic. It's not like the universe brings you a pony because you had this experience, right? And yet, we see several examples of how you're just waking yourself up to the stimuli that you see around you in the world. So this is the part of your brain that is literally responsible for what you see in the world and what you don't, what you hear and what you miss, the opportunities that you process and the ones that you miss. And it's all building with what you just did. Reminding yourself, training yourself that these are important things. Here's a quick example of how it can work. I worked with a woman out in the Bay Area near San Francisco, and she and her husband had this dream of having a sailboat. So she did a visualization exercise, much like the one you just did, visualizing herself on a sailboat. They didn't have the money to do it. It's very expensive, especially there in San Francisco, and it just was not in the budget. And so she identified this, she had a conversation about it, she talked about it, she put the picture up on her closet door, she started thinking about it, and one day on her way to work, she passed by a sign, a billboard on the side of the road on her normal route to work, and it was a sign for a timeshare sailboat company. She hadn't seen it before. It was her normal route. She just hadn't seen it before. And so, long story short, she and her husband now are the proud owners of a timeshare sailboat. They spend, I think, 3 or 4 days a month on the boat. They have dinner on the boat. They drink wine on the boat. They're really enjoying this. She didn't realize that that was an option before she started kind of thinking about it on this new level. So that's an example of what you're beginning to do here. Now, we can push it a little bit further. So the idea is to use those visuals as a shortcut. What you just discussed in its own way, and stay with me on this, is the beginning of a visual financial plan. You're beginning to remind yourself of the motivation of why you want something to happen, and it is possible to go even further with it. So if you're taking notes and you want to walk away with something that it's a tool that I can really recommend, if you will, just draw this rectangle on your notebook. It's just one rectangle divided into four spaces. This becomes a structure, a wireframe for your visual financial plan. So on the left-hand side, less dollars and more dollars at the top. Less money at the bottom, more money at the top. So how much does whatever you're talking about here cost you? Is it less or more, relatively, whatever it means? And then secondly, sooner on the left and later on the right. So if you're looking at something that's, let's call that vertical line in the middle 5 years. That's the 5-year mark. Something that you'd like to see sooner than 5 years goes on the left, something later than 5 years goes on the right. And the idea is to start to build in these pictures with whatever makes sense to you. Now, the ones that you see up here happen to be in the book, but they're in the middle as tear sheets, but you can use any pictures you want. You can use your own photographs, you can print things out online, whatever you see, but it really is helpful to make it visual. You can write on there if you'd like. But using visuals is really a quick, easy way to do this. Do it fast. It's a shortcut into your brain. What do things mean to you? And you can look at them and you know exactly what you're looking at. It's a highly personal, positive way to begin to approach this. So this really does become a visual financial plan, and it becomes the motivation for what you do next. Most people never take the time to do this. It only takes about 5 or 10 minutes, especially if you have the visuals collected in advance. That's kind of sometimes the longest part. So you can put this together, put it up somewhere in your house where you'll see it every day. Every time you walk by it, you will be stimulating that reticular activating system. Even if it's unintentional, even if you're on the way to the coffee maker and you pass it on the fridge, or you're putting your coat on and heading out the door, the more intentional you can make your focus on this, the more effective it is in terms of working and helping you wake up to see the opportunities around you. So this is the first step that most people never take the time to do, and you've already begun. So that is step one, creating a vision or reminding yourself of the vision of what you really want out of life. And with that, we're going to now get a little bit more tactical. That's the sort of ethereal part, the inspirational part. And so the question is, okay, great, we have this vision now, so how do we do it? What do we need to do practically, logically, to start to put some pieces into place to move toward this, not just from an inspirational point of view, but also from a tactical point of view? So we're going to take a look at that. The first thing I'm going to ask you to do, again, if you have a notebook in front of you, If you wouldn't mind jotting these things down that you see on the screen, this next piece will be more meaningful. So just grab a pen and just write, if you would, investment plan. Savings rate, communications, insurance, and estate planning. So these are five key areas of financial planning. These are building blocks that will either directly or indirectly support the vision that you just started to explore in our earlier exercise. So in a moment, I'm going to move to the next slide here, and I'm going to ask you a series of questions, and the questions I'm going to ask you in a moment are essentially a satisfaction rating. I'm going to ask you to give yourself a number, 1 through 10, on how satisfied you are in your own lives with each one of these five key areas. This is for your eyes only. I'm not going to ask you to share this with anybody else. So this is just a moment, a private moment that we'll all have for ourselves here. So the very first one, investment plan. Give yourself a number 1 through 10 on this statement. How much do you agree with it? And the statement is, I'm confident that my investment plan is allocated in a way appropriate for my goals. How confident are you that your investment plan is allocated in a way that's appropriate for your goals, 1 through 10. And 10, of course, means that you completely agree and you're completely confident. 1 means you're not. Next line, saving and investing rate. I'm satisfied with the amount of money that I'm currently saving or investing. How much do you agree with that statement? Question three is an if applicable statement. This may not be applicable to you, but if you have a spouse or a partner with whom you share a financial household, what number would you give yourself on this statement? I communicate regularly and effectively with my spouse or partner about money. Question four, insurance. I'm confident that the insurance I have of all sorts, health, life, auto, home, you could even consider things like long-term care or liability insurance, but just the whole basket of insurance. I'm confident the insurance I have would adequately protect me if I need it. And the last one is estate planning. I have a will or estate plan that's complete and up to date, 1 through 10. Okay, again, these are for your eyes only. Our goal in the next couple of minutes is to give you just a couple of, I call them swing thoughts, a couple of key thoughts. Like if we were talking at a cocktail party and we said, all right, well, what's the one thing that we can kind of look at in each one of these areas that might make a difference? That's what we're going to cover. It's just such a deep, these are such deep areas that we could spend days just talking about any one of these, but we just want to kind of share a couple of thoughts with you in these key areas as we move forward. And let me begin by saying that most people spend their entire lives avoiding all of them, right? So if you find yourself in that situation, if you're not happy with your scores, you are not alone, and the key is to take the first step. The key is to create momentum, and the key is to get closer to the 10 in the areas that are of most concern or focus for you. Don't try to take them all on at once. Pick one that you're not happy with the number with, and move it closer to the 10. And then when you get closer to the 10, pick up another one. The idea is to just take a step forward and then another one, like anything else we do in life. Again, and most people truly do spend most of their lives avoiding it until it gets to be a problem, and that's not optimally the way we want to do this. So with that in mind, let's kind of look at some fresh perspectives, some key thoughts in each one of those five areas that might get you going on that path. So let's look at investment plan. The first thing is, a lot of us put a great deal of pressure on ourselves that we have to really do a lot of research and we have to really do a lot of reading and have to really understand the markets in order to do this. I'm going to give you two options here to consider. The first one is, it's okay to get help. In the same way that you might take your car in to a mechanic, in the same way that, of course, most of us will go to a doctor if we're having a medical problem or question, it is okay to get professional help when it comes to your personal financial planning. There's nothing to be intimidated by, there's nothing to be scared of. In fact, I'm going to share with you a couple of websites and resources that if you'd like to consider working with a professional, these are places you can go find them. So you see several different websites for financial planners. And I would approach this in the same way that you would approach any other professional that you're looking at to bring into your life. Talk to friends, talk to family members, see who they might recommend. Check them out online. You can see all these different websites up here. And then ask for a meeting in the same way that you would if you were interviewing someone to work for you. Interview them. What kinds of clients do they work with? What kinds of goals do they help people with? What's the portfolio size that they tend to work with? Interview them and make sure that you're 100% comfortable with what you're hearing. There's also a website called FINRA Broker Check. FINRA is an industry regulatory organization, so that when you find someone that you think you're interested in, you can check them out on FINRA Broker Check to make sure that they're clear and that there's no issue around what they do. Right, that there's no problem with their past work. So I want to just say basic ideas to get some help, like any other area of our life that we might need help with. Now, if you prefer to do it yourself, and there is, of course, a way to save money and fees because these are professionals that you're hiring, you're paying them a portion of what you might be investing. And if you prefer not to do that, you prefer to do it yourself, I would do what I call the passion check. Are you passionate about investing? Do you really get excited about doing all the research and following what's happening in the markets today? You can't wait to read more. I'm really excited about it. And if you are, go for it. And make sure that you've got the education that's going to give you the basis. Take a community college course. Do some research. There's so much out there in terms of deep books that go very deep into investing concepts. Do the research. Use the web. Use the resources available to you to give yourself that kind of educational foundation to make your own investing decisions. So just approach it like anything else that you would in life. Don't let it become a big overwhelming question. The other thing that tends to come up here is, okay, great, so let's say I do have someone, let's say I do take a class and I'm ready to go, what do I actually invest? What can I expect? How can I make my money grow? And I know I've seen charts like this before, but I think they're fun to look at. Hypothetical money growth chart, a compound interest chart. Einstein was once asked what the most amazing phenomena was that he experienced in his career and all of his research. And he said that it was compound interest. And he said that it was fascinating when you looked at it on paper and even better when you actually did it. So if you want to look at compound interest charts, just for fun, let's see how we do here, if you can kind of take a guess. If we had some money, and if we had a hypothetical 4% return on that money per year, building over time over a course of 15 years, what happens to various amounts of money? It's just always kind of fun to look at it. So let's say we have $200 a month, which breaks down to about $6 or $7 a day. I don't know about you, but I can think of lots of ways that I spend $6 or $7 a day without even thinking about it. I live in downtown Chicago. I can spend $60 parking my car over the course of a weekend, right? So that's a lot of money that we can go through quickly. Not all of us do, but it's certainly possible. So if we save that instead of spending it, $200 a month, I don't want to take a guess. What happens to our $200 a month if we invest it and get this hypothetical 4% return on it over 15 years? Anyone want to take a guess? It's tough, right? It's tough to come up with that number. It's about $49,000. That's a significant amount of money that $6 or $7 a day can add up to. And, yeah, 15 years is a long time, but it's not like an entire lifetime. It just is amazing the way it grows. And, of course, you can do the math. We just have to add a zero. If we look at $2,000 a month, now it starts to get really interesting, and we've got nearly $500,000 that we've built up over the course of 15 years. Look at that last one. Wouldn't it be nice to have $10,000 a month that you could invest and that you could get a hypothetical 4% hypothetical return over 15 years? That's $330 a day. That's a lot of money. Some people have that money and they spend it on things like vacation homes that they don't go to very often or, maybe vacations that they don't enjoy that much, et cetera. Right? So it can happen. We do see people like that. That kind of money over time is going to turn into $2.4 million. It is amazing the way money can grow for us when we look at it a little bit differently. So it's just fun to remind ourselves of what can happen if we make different decisions. And again, if you go back to that $200 a month piece, that's a, you know, I'm not here to tell you not to drink coffee or latte, but that's about the cost of a latte in some places. So that can make a big significant difference too. $50,000 is a lot of money. So think about that as you are making saving and investing decisions. Let's come back and move on to this next idea of savings rate. We're going to go a little bit deeper and take a slightly different perspective here. When we talk about savings with people, the first thing that comes to mind is typically the B word, right? Budget. Who really wants to have a budget? It's like having a diet. No one really wants to go on a diet either, but you know, we see the utility of it. Instead of thinking about how much money you're saving as a budget, which is all about what you cannot spend, what if you shift your perspective here? What if you think about it as a values-based plan, a spending plan, that's talking about what you can spend your money on? So rather than talk about lack and what you're not going to be able to afford, talk about what you can spend your money on. Look carefully at your monthly expenditures and look for opportunities that might not be so obvious. Here's a quick example of a woman that we encountered in the research who was in her mid-50s. She was looking at her budget, at all of her costs, and she saw that really her biggest expense was, of course, her home. She was still paying off part of her house. It was an expensive house to maintain. All of her children were grown and had moved out of the house, and she found that it just wasn't as important to her as it was when they were younger. So she really made an interesting decision that most people don't look at. She sort of said, I don't need this house anymore. It's not important to me anymore. She was working at a family-owned business that she didn't really enjoy. She was feeling stressed and pressured as part of her job, but she felt like she had to because she needed the money for this house. And she just made a huge life change. She downsized her house. She now lives in a condo on Lake Michigan that is much smaller. She was able to leave her family business job that she didn't really like, and she has never been happier. She made a values-based spending decision. Maybe you're in a similar situation, maybe you're in an entirely different situation, but I challenge you to look at where you're spending your money and look for different ways to rethink, not what you can't spend, but what you can. Are you spending it on the things that's most important to you? So that's just a kind of a different way to look at savings. Let's talk about communications. What we find is that in most couples, that one or the other person takes primary responsibility for the money, and the other person happily abdicates that responsibility, and we see that quite a bit. If you're in that situation on either side of the equation, it's perfectly fine. It works really well as long as both parties know the state of the union, as I call it. You have to know the basics. You have to know what you've got, where it is that right for you? You have to sort of know that as a team. It doesn't work for just one of you to know that. It's the equivalent of going to the doctor and one of you knowing whether you've got high cholesterol or one of you knowing if you have low blood pressure. You both need to know that. These are financial health things. So we really encourage you to sit down and have a conversation where you really get into the minutiae of all of the money and the financial decisions you've made thus far. The other thing that we see that's a huge opportunity that most people never do is to begin to have the kind of prosperity picture vision conversation that we all just did together, but do that with your spouse. I learned things about my husband that I never knew by doing that 3-minute exercise with him. You know, he was going through and he picked a picture of a dinner plate and a glass of wine. And he said, I picked this picture and I envisioned us having a dinner party, which is something we do all the time, we like to do that, in LA. I'm living in Chicago. He's like, I envision us in Los Angeles. I'd like to live part-time in Los Angeles. And I did not know that. He never told me. He didn't even realize it until he did that particular exercise. So we're actually beginning to talk about maybe doing that part-time. So it's amazing what you can find out about people that you really care about when you do that. You can start to build a picture with the quadrants like we talked about, an amazingly exciting thing to do with your spouse or significant other. Let's talk about insurance. The thing that I say about insurance is that it's better than Ambien. Right? If you have trouble sleeping and you've got those, oh my gosh, wide awake moments at 2 a.m., this is a way to help kind of assuage some of those concerns and anxieties and fears. You can have the best financial plan in the world, and if you don't have the right safety net underneath it, it's still at risk. So insurance, as you all know, gives you that safety net. I want to challenge you. We're not going to talk in depth about insurance, but I'm going to challenge you right now. Do you have the right coverages? Are you protecting not just yourself, but your family, especially if you have young children? Is this in place the way it needs to be? Should, God forbid, something happen that you're not expecting, is everyone within your immediate care protected in the way that they need to be? And one thing that I will mention specifically that we might not have mentioned 10 years ago is long-term care. It's one of the most important kind of forms of insurance that's becoming more relevant as our country ages. This is something that will protect you and anyone that you love. So if you have aging parents that might not have long-term care, this long-term care covers you if you need nursing home care or in-home care that's not covered by Medicare. This is something that becomes invaluable. It can cost $100,000 a year easily to get nursing home assistance if you don't have the right insurance. And that's a great deal of money. That's just for a middle-of-the-road place in a sort of middle-of-the-road city, and it goes up from there sometimes. So this is something that I would really kind of put on everyone's radar screen to look into. So go home in the next 72 hours. That's kind of the time frame we have. Whenever that's kind of what learning says. And when we learn something new, we have about 72 hours to create some momentum behind it. So in the next 3 days, check. Check your insurances. Make sure you and your family are covered. And then finally, an area that is avoided like no other is estate planning. So half of the country does not have an estate plan. And in the interest of full disclosure, I have to tell you, I don't either. Right? I'm in the process of doing it, but I just feel like I need to be honest about that. It is a time-consuming process. We're in the middle of it now. If you don't have one, you're not alone. But really, this is a love letter to those you will leave behind. That's really what an estate plan is. This is not for you. This is for the people you love most in this world. So think of it this way. If you were not here right now, would things be in place the way you need them to be in place for the people that you love? So think of it as a love letter to those you'll leave behind. So these are some basic ideas. Again, these are just quick ideas that we might share if we were talking together at a party about some basic tools of financial planning. And now we're going to switch gears into those two areas that I mentioned earlier that are some of the best ways we've seen, the research says, to boost prosperity and two of the least talked about things. So let's talk first about gratitude. Gratitude is an amazingly powerful tool that we can use in our financial lives and in other areas of our lives as well. And it's a fascinating area. So as you start to think about what you're grateful for and how much you intentionally express your gratitude, really interesting things can happen. And you know what they are. You've probably read some research. It's kind of a common topic in magazines. But what happens when you intentionally express gratitude? Does anyone have any experience with this, or have you read anything? If I intentionally express something I'm grateful for, what's going to happen tonight to me physiologically right away? Yes? You relax and your blood pressure goes down. You have less stress. Absolutely. That's absolutely right. What else? You smile more? You do. You do. Yes.
It starts
spiraling a snowball, all kinds of things that we can be grateful for. It is a contagion. It's a contagion within ourselves, and it's a contagion for other people. And it can do all of the things that we're saying. We're healthier. We have lower stress levels. We sleep better. We're actually happier people. In fact, there is research on happierhuman.com, if you're interested in this, that says that being intentionally grateful actually makes you feel happier than doubling your income. That's quite a research study. So the question is, it's really interesting, why? Why does this happen? And I don't know if you find this interesting, but I do. In our research around gratitude, especially around financial gratitude, we looked at why does this happen? Why does it seem to be this magical sort of elixir? And the reason why is really simple. Because if I ask you right now to express something that you're grateful for, it is impossible at that very same moment to also focus on what you're not happy about or what you're not in control of or what you're worried about. It's absolutely impossible. So the more moments that you can spend intentionally expressing gratitude, you know, you're essentially pushing out all those negative thoughts that weigh us down and make us sick and stress us out. So we're actually going to do that right now because I want everyone to feel good in the room. So I'm going to ask you in a moment to turn to a partner again. Try to make it a different partner if you can without going out of your way. I don't want anyone to have to move. But if it's easy, just talk to somebody else. And you can do this with two people. Express something that you are grateful for. Let's make it financially. Could be a big thing. Or it could be that you got a coupon at Starbucks today. It could be anything at all. Something that you're grateful for financially. Have make sure that both of you have a chance to do that. There will be speed gratitude. Go ahead. Focusing on gratitude, when she was at a stoplight when she was driving, she would immediately do what? She had a moment to herself, she would pick up her phone. Now, whenever she's at a stoplight, she does gratitude exercises. So that is her cue to stop at that moment and think about something she's intentionally grateful for. There are a lot of ways to do it. You could do a gratitude journal. You could spend 3 minutes a day writing down what you're grateful for. You could record it. You could do it. You know, you could do it that way. You could tell someone else. There's so many ways you can do it. And why is this a financial workshop topic? Because if we're more grateful financially in another areas of our lives, we're happier. We just saw that. We see all this research. If we're happier, we tend to do better at work. We tend to actually earn more money. There's research that supports that as well. You can actually bring more money into your life. And also, you can make better financial decisions when you're coming from a calm, centered place. You know, we know that being stressed out and having trouble sleeping and not being able to focus is not a good basis to make good financial decisions, right? Like any other decision in your life. So this is a tool that you can use that has very tangible application in your financial decision making and in your ability to kind of bring more financial prosperity into your life. Let's talk about one more area as we kind of get to the end here. And the next area, the next big, powerful way to boost prosperity is also not intuitive. It's not talked about a lot, but it's giving. How many of you have heard that it's better to give than receive? It's not true. And really, giving is fantastic, but we really have to all be able to do both. If you kind of go back to this whole idea of yin and yang, and you kind of go to this idea that we feed into one another, in order for anyone to give, they have to have somebody or some entity to receive, right? And it works both ways. So I'm going to ask you to do this. If you all would, make two fists make two fists. When you're like this, and you're holding on, and you've got yourself closed off, are you able to accept anything right now?
No.
So if you can release it, if you can let it go, you're not only giving it up and relaxing, but you're putting yourself now in a position to receive. It really is a yin and a yang. And so yin can be an incredibly powerful tool for the people that you're helping, and also for you. And I know that that's not why we give, that's not typically the primary motivation. I am guessing that many of you, if not all of you, are huge givers right now. The research says that about 80% of us in the U.S. give philanthropically in some way, at some level. So I'm guessing most of you do give of your time, give of your treasure, as they say. And yet it's really fascinating when you start to think about the opportunities that even going further could potentially open up. Now, it helps all the people that you're giving to, of course, but there's also huge benefit to you. So there was a project released a few years ago called the Longevity Project. I don't know if anyone's familiar with this. It was a study, I see a few head nods, a study of a control group of people and a kind of experimental group over an 80-year period. 80 years. That's how long the study lasted. It lasted so long that the research outlasted the researchers, right? They actually had to have different teams come in to do this. And one of the key takeaways was that people who had engaged in philanthropic activity and in giving money actually outlived those that did not. So there was that discernible of a health and longevity benefit that they realized from this research. So that is one thing to kind of keep in mind, that helps. And of course, it's kind of like gratitude, like we just talked about it a minute ago. If you're focusing on what's really good, it's impossible to focus on bad things. It's the same thing, that if your focus is on other people who need help, it's impossible to think of your own problems. It lowers the stress, it lowers all of those bad things, it allows us to be happier people, and it kind of creates that fluidity that we talked about. It's also been proven, and this is fascinating to me, it's almost a strange thing to talk about, but it's been proven that the more you give of your money, the more that you earn or kind of bring in by the end of the year. It's so strange. This is research by Arthur Brooks. You can read about it in the New York Times if you're interested, but Brooks and his team actually looked at this on an individual level and on an entire country basis and realized that if you took, say, two families living in the same area of the country with the same household income, the same demographics, the family that gave $100 more per year than the other family actually had a higher W-2 at the end of the year. Actually brought in more money. You could call it karma if you want, but there's actually something that researchers call the wealth effect. And what the wealth effect says is that if I give some money, especially if it's a little bit of a stretch for me, if I give $5,000, I may think, gosh, that is a lot of money. I must be doing really well if I can give $5,000 to someone else. And you start to actually then create this nice ripple effect that we've been talking about of being more productive, being better at work, attracting more money, getting involved in other projects, things that will earn us more income. So it is a fascinating area. And it gets even more exciting when we talk about the fact that we are looking around, we have a few men, you are all welcome, all the men in the room, we love you, I like boys, it's not an anti-male sentiment, but the fact that we are mostly women in this room is amazing to me, and I don't often get that opportunity to talk to just women, and I love that we're all here together because, as you've probably seen, women are incredibly powerful as change makers. And Dalai Lama was recently quoted at a peace conference that he led as saying that the Western woman will change the world, save the world, rather. And the reason that he's saying that is something that we all intuitively know. I'm guessing many of you here are involved in philanthropy in some way. Every philanthropic organization, the United Nations, the organizations that they govern on down, are realizing that they will have better effect if they put the resources and the money that they're giving away into the hands of women. Have you seen this? They're starting to see that when they put money, resources, food, whatever it might be, into the hands of women, it's more likely to get disseminated, it's more likely to be given back, it's more likely to be funneled out into the community. It's not that men don't do this too, of course they do. But there is something that they have seen about this demographic trending that women are likely to reinvest to go further. And so it gets really exciting when you look at the demographics across the world, because in the next 15 years, women are estimated to inherit 25 $1 trillion. Women are likely to outlive men. That's part of the reason the demographics kind of trends that we're seeing are starting to happen. So in the next 15 years, women will have fallen into their hands about $25 trillion by some estimates. If 1% of $25 trillion was given away, there would be no more world hunger. If 1% of $25 trillion was given away, there would also be an education for every single child, not just in the U.S., but in the world, on the globe. That is what 1% of $25 trillion can do, and that money is about to fall into the hands of women. I think it's such an exciting kind of point in history that we're all at. And if we go further, if we look at what 10% of $25 trillion can do, it's crazy. You could eliminate every transmittable disease worldwide with 10% of $25 trillion. You could increase renewable energy research by 1,000%, increase autism, breast cancer, and Alzheimer's research by 1,000%. You could fund an organization to actually end human trafficking with 10% of $25 trillion. It is amazing what that money can do. So if you think of all of us in this room as part of this big global kind of community, that is about to have this kind of inheritance shift begin to happen and all this money fall into our hands. It is amazing what we can all do together, and I think that the Dalai Lama is right. The Western women here really are in a unique position to make a huge shift in what's going on around us. So I just kind of leave that as a little seed of an idea for all of you as we move forward. So we're going to switch now. We've got just a couple of a minute or two for questions. If anyone has any questions, we'd be glad to take them. And I am going to just kind of leave you with one thought at the end. I do have one last idea I'd like to bring us back. So we'll just take literally a minute or two if anyone has any questions, and we'll wrap up. Does anyone have any questions? Yes.
I'm just curious, all the financial predictive algorithms count on kind of a 4% increase in rate of return if you invest in the market. Do you ever question that?
So the question is that a lot of algorithms look at 4% as sort of a the barometer for planning for retirement. Do we question that? There's never a guarantee for the market. 4% is a very modest number if you look at history. If you look at the history of this market having existed, it's more like 7 to 9%, depending on exactly which indexes you look at. So 4% is a very conservative way to look at it, but of course, I wish I could say there's a guarantee. I wish I could say that we know for sure that's going to happen. We can't say that, but we do know that's a pretty conservative number. Okay, as we wrap up here, and I'll be available for questions afterwards at the signing. There's a book signing after this. I want to ask you all that are still seated here to write down one thing that you have thought about in our time together. Just one thing that you would like to do for yourselves, because we're about to wrap up. We're all about to walk out of those exit doors in the next minute or so. And at that point, that's going to become the only thing that matters. And what you do next. And you can use this as a chance to sort of say, well, this was interesting, and we looked at some pictures, and we kind of looked at some stuff and thought about some new ideas and leave it at that. But for your sake, I hope, my wish for you is that you'll go further. Is that you'll think about something that you've considered in this workshop that you'd like to do for yourselves. It could be anything at all. It could be a tactical thing. It could be a big, huge dream thing. It could be both. Write down one thing for yourselves. It could be write it down anywhere at all. Write it on your phone. Write it on your hand. So that kind of summarizes where we went. We began with creating a vision. And the very unique power that being clear about what we want out of life and associating that with the money and with our financial decision-making and wherewithal can be a huge tool, a huge motivator, and a way to get ourselves really focused on where we go next. Number two, knowing where we stand financially, checking in on a few basic building blocks of financial planning, and hopefully looking at those things with a little bit of a fresh perspective, and most importantly, with some motivation to take a step. Especially in the areas that you're most concerned about for yourselves personally. And third of all, these two very unusual, not talked about, but very powerful ways to boost prosperity, which are gratitude and giving. So now I just wrote down one thing, hopefully, that's really important to you. And I am going to challenge you. Our hope for you, my hope for you, is that you will go out and do whatever you need to do, whatever it takes to make whatever that thing is happen, to make the million ideas that you had earlier actually happen. Because, as I conclude in the famous words of Eleanor Roosevelt, the future belongs to those who believe in the beauty of their dreams. So thank you so much. Here's to your prosperity.